everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as audio and video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA, as well as their outstanding summer yearly writers conference at pnwa.org. Well, my guest today is Patricia Aberdeen, who was a collaborator with Joe Nesbitt on the book Megatrends, which burst onto the scene a few years back, hit number one on the New York Times bestseller list, and was a book that dealt with large, sweeping changes in human thoughts, particularly as it related to business and economics and society. And, well, now Patricia is back with another book, this one identifying yet another megatrend. The book is called Conscious Money. Now, you may think that a book about conscious money does not necessarily relate to the normal subject here, an author to author, which is us writers, but I think that you will discover, once you meet Patricia and hear about conscious money, how closely this subject is to our hearts. But she will do a better job than I at explaining that, so let's get her on the show. Patricia, welcome to Author.
How are you doing, Bill? Great to be speaking with you.
Well, I'm doing fabulously well. And do you know why I'm doing well, Patricia?
I actually don't know why, but
because
I look forward to
hearing. Because I'm doing what I love to do. I love talking to writers. And when I do that, I'm a happy man. And now I'm talking to you.
Oh, that's fantastic.
You see how it works? All right. That's... Now, I could try to explain conscious money. I have my ideas about how to do it. But it is your baby. So, in a nutshell, and I know that you've been trained to do this, as all good writers are, what is conscious money? Money doesn't have conscious.
Well,
it's just a piece of paper. How could it
be? Well, I would love to do that. I would love to do that, but I must correct the record here.
Did I say Joe Nesbitt instead of John Nesbitt?
It is. You said Joe.
Oh,
and the gentleman's name is John.
I'm sorry.
I used to be married to him, so, you know, we've really got to get his name right.
John Nesbitt. I am sorry, John. I've never met John, so, yes, it is John Nesbitt. All right,
okay,
thank you very
good.
Much.
Okay, good. Well, we've got that taken care of.
As an ex-journalist, you did your thing. Okay, so you co-authored, you collaborated with John Nesbitt on
Megatrends.
On Megatrends. And so we've got a new Megatrend.
We co-authored many books together. We co-authored Megatrends 2000, which was a number one New York Times bestseller, and several other books, including Reinventing the Corporation and Megatrends for Women, and like that. So now I find myself writing about conscious money, in part because, 7 years ago, I wrote a book called Megatrends 2010. Of course, I'm cursing myself for not calling it some date later into the future, because here we are in 2012, and I've got a date 2 years ago on my previous book. But at any rate, that book was about the rise of what I call conscious capitalism.
Right.
And that book inspired me to think about, well, what if the lessons of conscious capitalism were to be applied in the area of personal finance? What would that look like? So I think that conscious money is really about, when you step back and look at the big picture, which is a megatrends person is what I'm trained to do, conscious money is about having awareness in your relationship with money. It's about having a positive, life-affirming relationship with money, because, like it or not, money's part of our lives, and we writers sometimes would prefer for that not to be the case, but nevertheless,
yep,
it is part of our life. And I think that we can be more fulfilled as human beings if we have a positive relationship with money, and we can make a difference in the world, not just for ourselves, but for others. Money is an important force in our world, and if we can have a positive relationship with it, it can be satisfying and it can change the world.
You know, I think it's really great that you're framing it that way, because one of the challenges with dealing with money is to go on a sort of metaphysical level, is that there is the challenge, you know, money can come to represent survival. It can come to represent maintaining this earthly body, this bag of bones, this meat sack, to keep it from not dying and keep a roof over its head. And when we look upon our lives that way, at least I find, is often when we make our worst choices, we make our smallest choices, our least generous choices. But if you can, to be able to frame money not merely in terms of survival, but in terms of some sort of, my wife, for instance, my wife was the one who first pointed out to me, she said, you know, money is just energy, really.
Oh,
it's
bless
just energy
so
being
true.
Redistributed. But you don't think of it that way. You can think of it like a stone, like just this dead thing, but it actually, strangely, isn't. Maybe you can talk to that.
Well, you've brought up something that a couple of things there that I'd love to address in regard to conscious money. And the first thing is that I talked about having that positive relationship. We have that positive relationship when values and our human awareness inform our financial choices. And
right.
And what you just described, that notion of survival that is, you know, what I guess you could call the mundane view of money or the conventional view of money. In that conventional view of money, values have no role to play whatsoever in our relationship with money. It's all about how much money do you have, how much money do you need, and don't be thinking, get the money you need and then worry about your values later on.
Right.
So conscious money kind of turns that thought kind of thinking around to say, actually, your values can inform your financial choices, provided you also observe some of the basic rules of sound financial practice. I'm not suggesting that you say, oh, love is my top value, so I'm just going to love, and I'm certainly not going to balance my checkbook.
Right.
You know, love involve your financial choices, but also balance your checkbook. That's a good idea, too.
You know, but the key word here, it seems to me, is conscious. When I was watching you speak about, on the internet, about conscious capitalism, and you were talking about sort of unconscious capitalism. Well, you did a great description of it, which is that, I forget the quote, what is the quote about profits, the main job of a corporation?
I was quoting the esteemed Nobel Prize winner, Milton Friedman, who made a statement in 1970 in an article in the New York Times Magazine, actually it was, in which he made a statement which would be considered absolutely ludicrous, even in the highest boardrooms of the least the CEOs with the least integrity. And Milton Friedman said, "The social responsibility of business is to increase profits."
Right.
That was the title of his article. And that, for me, that statement embodies what I call unconscious capitalism. Now, most of the time I don't call it that because I don't want to sound judgmental.
Right.
But let's call it traditional capitalism to kind of, you know, because I don't want to put a big negative label on it, because that's not going to get
survival-based
anywhere,
capitalism.
Anywhere. Yeah.
But the business does have to make a profit. I mean, it does have to make a profit, but this,
sure.
But business is a part of life. It's a part of society.
Exactly,
part of all,
so
human beings are running it.
Exactly so, and business has to make a profit. And what the folks that I call conscious capitalists want to make a profit also, but they go about it in a very, very different way. The Milton Friedman statement could be translated as to say, all we really care about is investors. That's another way to say to kind of translate that statement into a parlance that the everyday person could understand. But conscious capitalism says, well, we want to make profits too. We care about investors too. But the way we go about conducting our business is different. We take a holistic view of business. We look at it as an ecosystem in which many parties, not just investors, although they are important, but many parties play an important role. Many parties contribute a great deal to the enterprise. And those parties, of course, include, as you would expect, customers. If you don't have a customer, you don't have a business. Employees, suppliers, the communities you live in, and ultimately the planet at large and its environment. Yeah. So the conscious capitalists look at the whole. And John Mackey, who has become a good friend of mine, the CEO of Whole Foods, started a group of us who talk about conscious capitalism. And he talks about what he calls the paradox of profit, which is to say you actually can make more profit if you don't have profit as your intention, but have the health of the enterprise as a whole, including all the stakeholders who contribute to it, as your frame of reference.
I love it. There's a fantastic quote by a Zen master where he sees an archer in a competition, a master archer in a competition. And he says of the archer, his desire, his need to win will prevent him from winning. And
there
it reminds me of the same thing, which is if your need for profit can prevent you from having it because you lose sight, whereas opposed to focusing on the organic whole will produce it organically, naturalistically. As opposed
hear,
to
hear.
Focusing laser-like on the end of that.
Absolutely so. And now what I can tell you is that studies have been done, conducted by another colleague of mine in the Conscious Capitalism Group, of 28 companies that act pretty much as conscious capitalists. That is to say, they manage their businesses. Of course, they want to make a profit.
Right.
But they manage their business to have positive relationships with all these stakeholders. Over a 10-year period, these 28 companies, which include names that all of us have heard are good businesses,
right,
such as Google, Amazon, Honda, Costco, another great company,
yeah.
Whole Foods, Southwest Airlines, over a period of 10 years, these companies outperformed the S&P 500, which if some of our listeners are familiar with that term, those are the 500 largest companies. That's a benchmark that financial performance is compared to. Outperformed the S&P 500 by a factor of 10.
What?
The S&P 500 went up 100% over a 10-year period, which is actually pretty good. But these 28 companies, their stock market value went up 1,000%.
Wow.
This whole notion that you got to be mean, you got to be lean in business, you can't care about people,
right,
all you can care about profit. Guess what?
Yeah.
You don't earn that much profit when you do it that way.
I so believe that, and again, the word here is conscious because, you know, Author Magazine is a magazine for writers and readers, but our tagline is "You are the author of your own life," and even though I write,
I love that. So beautiful.
I, you know, that one came to me the day I came up with the name of the magazine, and I knew that's what I wanted to have it be about. And really, all the interviews I conduct, and the essays that I write, and as much as I can, the magazine as a whole focuses on one thing, which is be conscious of your choices, lead a conscious life. You know, you've got to be conscious about what you're writing, and what you choose to write, and how you write it. But that consciousness, hopefully, will spread to all the choices. Be conscious of the choices you're making. Be aware of the choices. Understand that each of those choices has an influence on your life, will dictate your life, whether it's monetarily or otherwise.
Well, Bill, you've just described pretty much the whole premise of the book Conscious Money. I mean, absolutely, completely. Now, I want to link all that stuff that I said about conscious capitalism to conscious money, because it's
very
simple link.
We're talking about the personal now, moving from the big to the from the macro to the micro in a way.
Well, or moving from finance as it exists in business to the realm of personal finance that you and I as individuals have to do in our money lives. So just as conscious capitalism, I think, came first, because now I wrote about that first because now I can evoke the successful connection between human values and higher consciousness, which is all about choice, as you so aptly point out. And I can say, well, look, you can't tell me it's not possible, because here I can show you these studies and I can show you all these companies who are conscious capitalists who have a new financial operating system that is going to be what saves humanity in the wake of the old financial system, which is crashing all around us, and especially on Wall Street.
It is indeed.
Absolutely.
Have you read Daniel Pink's book, Drive?
I have not.
Okay, so I interviewed Daniel Pink. It's a great book.
I love Dan Pink, and he's a fabulous guy, both as a professionally and personally. But when I'm just talking author to author, when I'm writing a book, I never read anybody else's books.
I totally understand.
So I'm a little behind in my reading.
I totally understand. But one of the tenets of Drive, very quickly, is that the old carrot and stick model for employees should be abandoned. That human beings don't want the carrot and stick. They want their motivation, their drive comes from within, lo and behold. So the business model predicated on human beings being so self-motivated, innerly driven, conscious beings will do better than the old reward them when they do well, punish them when they do bad, that we provide our own motivation. And this seems to link to the same thing, which is the business will thrive when you acknowledge what a human being actually is.
Absolutely, absolutely so.
Okay,
and
but I keep
when
getting
you
off for the money.
The money. You're not getting me off track at all, but you're enlightening me and entertaining me so that I can relax and not be a robot and give you my regular speech, but so we can have a real conversation here. And this is the time for me to pull in something else, because I know we want to talk about the role of money in the lives of writers and artists. So another part of what Dan is talking about and what I'm talking about and what I talked about with John Nesbitt is that we had an agricultural economy that was, prehistorically, who knows what kind of an economy we had, but we had first an agricultural economy, then an industrial economy. And in that Megatrends book that you talked about, which was enormously successful, John and I talked about the shift from an industrial to an information society. Yeah. People said, you're nuts. How can you make money on information? It's not steel. You can't make a car out of it. It's not land. You can't grow crops on it. And they practically threw rotten apples at us. It was a really controversial idea. Now, that was in 1982, just 30 years ago. And very soon after that, global information technology was a multi-trillion-dollar business. Yeah. So much of the time, you cannot see the mega trend that is staring you in the face.
Right.
You just can't see it. So now that I believe the information, and so does Dan Pink, that the information economy is passé, totally passé, that we are in a new period that he associates, in which he talks about the right brain people are the ones who are going to succeed, who we know, of course, are the artists and the writers. And I talk about it in just a slightly different way, but we're really talking about the same thing, as the new economy of consciousness, during which we create new jobs, think Apple, think Google, we create new wealth, ditto, not through the manipulation or the mining of information, but through cultivating the genius of human consciousness. And that is exactly what writers and artists have always done, and scientists. The great scientists, writers, artists were the shamans, cultural shamans of our world, and in the past they did their job. But today, that job, that need to connect to a sense of higher consciousness, to an intuitive world, to a right brain world, is there for all of us. I mean, the best appliance repair people are using creativity in their every day on the job. And it's not just artists and writers anymore. It's the best real estate salespeople, the best appliance repair people, the best on and on and on.
Well, and I will tell you some trend that I think I have noticed, and I know you wrote one mega trend. Was it Mega Trends for Women you'd written?
John and I wrote that together, yes, but I was the lead author, yep.
So, you know, you're talking about sort of consciousness and intuition and essentially a spiritual view of life on Earth here. And what I have seen within this, what I think of as sort of a, I call it the secular spiritual revolution. I see it happening.
Ooh.
It was called like New Age in the 70s or in early 80s, but it's changed considerably since then. That that while there is a lot of great teachers in this, I call them teacher writers in this field, people like Gary Zukav and Eckhart Tolle, and you know there are men.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great women teachers, but overwhelmingly this movement is being driven by women. Overwhelmingly, the ones buying the books and going to the seminars is women, because I think that women are the ones who, and they're the ones reading my articles more so than the men a lot of the times, is because women have allowed themselves a regular communication with that part of themselves, with that intuitive.
Yeah, that's fair.
Oh, I think it's absolutely true. It's absolutely
yep.
true. I go to these things and I see a couple guys and all these women, you know, because I think it's still harder for men. They still want to lean on the left brain. It's sort of how we were trained, you know, except the artist
helps
away from it.
I think that's true, but, you know, you do see men are changing so much. I mean, that's in my experience, men are changing enormously. And, of course, everyone loves to point to those women who sort of are worse than the men, and there are a few of them out there, you know.
Yeah.
So that part of it is true as well. But I think that what that says about the artists and the writers that we're talking to today is this. You have never, if you have an uneasy relationship with money, and I'm bringing this up because
right.
you and I chatted a little bit about
yeah.
this before we began our conversation. If you have an uneasy relationship with money, that's probably because you never lived in an economic era in which creativity and higher consciousness were the raw material, the most valuable raw material that exists economically. It's more important than oil. It's more important than technology, because technology, once it's produced, is instantly out of date because some genius somewhere has made an upgrade in her mind or his mind, which makes it completely out of date. So technology is simply consciousness externalized.
Yeah.
And that link to consciousness, cultivating that link to consciousness, is what those brilliant tech people that I can't even imagine their skills at Google and Apple and all of those places
yeah.
do. I mean, they can sit, and let's bring Eckhart Tolle back in here, because
yeah.
we read him and we go, oh, yeah, that's the spiritual stuff. Well, not necessarily. Eckhart Tolle is talking about being able to be in the present without mental distraction or emotional.
Which is where everything
damage.
Is.
Which
everything
is where everything
exists
is.
Now. Not in the future.
Exactly.
Not in the past.
And those brilliant scientists and technology engineers can sit down with a technological problem that would just blind me, and their joy is to be totally present with that ability. Now, if that isn't meditation, I don't know what is.
Of course it is. No, it absolutely is. And what's so fascinating about how the world has changed, I read this article about it, actually, and I never thought about it, but I read this article years ago in The Atlantic. It might have even been from John. You know, it might have even been John who wrote it. It's very possible, John Nesbitt, because I think it was a guy who wrote it. But he said, you know, it used to be that a guy owned the factory. He owned the machine. And all these people learned to operate the machine. But the guy who owned the machine, he owned the machine, you know, and it was his.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said, there is no machine. He said the software engineers, for instance, is just one example. They are the machine. It's their ideas.
Yes.
They're creating
yes,
it.
Yes,
they can
yes,
they
yes,
take
yes.
it with them. The machine doesn't exist anymore, really. We are all the machine. The Internet is what? I mean, there are some people who work, but we're all the Internet.
Exactly, exactly. So that's kind of like the CEO who finally gets it and says, 100% of my assets walk out the front door every single day at 5 o'clock. Well, of course, they don't at 5 o'clock if they're really assets, but let's say 8 o'clock, I don't know, whatever time it is. You know, it's true, and we are in a new economic period, which is, let's talk writers, why a lady named J.K. Rowling can buy and sell the Queen of England.
Yes, it's true.
She was very famously a welfare mom in Edinburgh, didn't have two dimes to rub together, although, as she says, ideas that I lived in an unheated apartment are absurd. I may have been poor, but I'm not stupid. Of course I rented an apartment where the heat was included.
Right.
You know, she in a matter of well under a decade, her wealth grew to such an enormous pace because of what? Nothing but her higher consciousness and her creativity, nothing else. Okay, a couple of pens and some paper,
maybe.
No, but it was, that's it.
Yeah, and I think that's more and more the case. And I think it's more and more the case. The key, though, is creating consciously as opposed to unconsciously. I always say that when you can create out of fear, which to me is unconscious creation, by saying, I don't want that. Whatever that is. And so you try to just run away from it. And wherever you end up running away from X and you run to Y, you've just created Y. But what you want to do is say, I don't want X, but I do want A. And then you travel towards A, not away from X. Are you following what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Beautiful description of conscious creation.
You create towards, not away from. You know, the old model of capitalism that you described is one of the things I loathe most about a certain theory behind evolution, which was evolution was about not dying, not about living. We evolved to avoid death. And I don't think human beings or anything lives to get up every day and not die. You get up every day to live, which is in the direction of love, which is in the direction of towards what you want, not away from what you don't want. But it's very easy to fall into the habit of creating away from what you don't want, which is nothing.
That's true.
It is just random, practically. Oh, don't get me started.
That's true.
And so give me an example. We have just a couple minutes left of a conscious money choice you have made in your life that you have seen a positive benefit from.
Oh, geez, this goes back forever. I mean, just being a young woman in my 20s, not knowing all I knew was I wanted to be a writer. I had no idea how you became a writer.
Right.
Someone had said to me, you go to journalism school, I would have done it. Well, thank God they didn't, because it would have ruined me. But I invested in myself. I spent 5 years learning how to write a page that I wouldn't barf when I read it. I mean, I spent 5 years of my life from age 25 when I finally committed. You know, I had various different jobs after college, but at age 25, it was like, it's now or never. You know, you've got to do this. And I just did whatever I could. I took a course. I put up with a horrible boyfriend because he was a good writer and he could help me. You know,
So you made a choice for something you wanted.
I made
not
a choice
for the money,
for
but for
my
what you
deepest
wanted.
Value. My deepest value, my heart of heart, to do what I wanted to do. Just as you said at the beginning of our conversation, I'm great because I'm doing what I want to do.
And what a way to end this conversation. Perfect. No, Patricia, thank you so much for coming on. Run out and buy the book, everyone. Conscious Money can't hurt you again. Thank you so much for coming on, Patricia.
My pleasure, Bill. Been an absolute delight.
Indeed it has. And okay, everybody. You heard what she said. Be conscious of your choices, and you can't go wrong. Be conscious of every word you put on the page, of every hello you give. Be conscious, conscious, conscious. It's the only way to live. I'll see you next week. I hope to see you next week. Oh, there's...